This is Digital Story Podcast number 625, March 6, 2018. Today's theme is Like to Shoot or Shoot for Likes. I'm Derek Story. Social media has revealed something about photographers that we suspected before, but have now confirmed. They are more interested in receiving likes than suggestions. Some say this is an addiction. I think it's human nature, and I explore this topic on today's TDS Photography Podcast. So I've learned a lot about photographers and people in general, for that fact, over the last decade while working online for LowPro, Rocky Nook, CT Digital Photography, The Digital Story, and now Skylum as well. And I think, generally speaking, photographers who post images online, you know, they feel good about the work that they're sharing, and they look forward to positive responses about it. And this is very human. The one thing that I'm going to talk about here in a few minutes is that can also compromise our artistic growth. But I'll get to that in a minute. So there are different places online where we can post shots. There's Instagram, there's Facebook, there's our own blog, you know, all that kind of stuff. And those different areas have different types of audiences. And I think one of the keys to all of this is really recognizing, you know, what type of audience you're posting to, and then sort of gauging the response that you get from them, you know, based on, okay, who is this audience? For instance, if your Facebook site is mainly friends and family, then, you know, they're going to be very positive and supportive about the photography that you put on there. Instagram, well, they're a little different. They might not be as close to you as the folks on Facebook, but generally speaking, you know, they're looking for pretty pictures. If they see a pretty picture, you're going to get a like. And then you get into the more hardcore photography sites where people take a little bit more time to look at your stuff. And there you're going to get, hopefully, some constructive criticism and maybe ideas that are a little bit more thoughtful and hopefully helpful to you as an artist. So audience is a big deal. And audience comes to play in just about everything that we do as creators. Whether I'm writing an article, I really need to know who I'm writing this article to so that I can shape the article in a way that resonates with that particular audience. As a photographer, very similar situation. For instance, I shoot much differently for my commercial clients than I do for, let's say, on Instagram, because all of my commercial clients that I work with, I understand their brand. I've spent a lot of time, you know, listening to what they want in images, and then I try to make the shots fit for what they want to use them for. Match the content to the audience. On Instagram, it's a little bit different. Instagram for me is a visual diary of my daily life. So there I'm having fun. I am posting shots as I see them. I'm taking a walk and I see something cool. I photograph it with my iPhone, maybe touch it up a little bit on Instagram, do a little bit of post with the Instagram tools, and I put it online and I go, is this interesting? Or, you know, is this fun? Do you like this? And then, you know, wait for people to respond, both with comments and with likes. So that's a little bit different. And then there are sites such as the public group that I'm helping with over at Skylum Photography, where you have very serious photographers, people who are very interested in creating good work. And some of them are very interested in hearing what other photographers think about their work. And so that is a different place altogether. So you could get away with a fun kitten photo on Instagram or Facebook. You might not want to put a fun kitten photo on the Skylum public group unless you've really done something with it that goes beyond just cute kitten. Okay, so here's a test that you can do about this. And let's take Instagram, because I love Instagram and I love posting there. So on Instagram, one day at a specific time, let's say 9 a.m, you put a shot on there of one of your best sunset shots. And what I mean, one of your best, in that one of God's best sunset shots, right? Because let's face it, it doesn't take a lot of photographic skill to photograph a sunset. Basically, you point the camera, you frame the shot, you take the picture, God's doing all the work. So let's say that you put a sunset up that's, you know, very colorful, very beautiful, but doesn't have much else going on. In other words, you're not wrestling with the foreground. You're not trying to do anything fancy. You're just recording a sunset and sharing it on Instagram. So you put that on there for 24 hours. And at the end of 24 hours, you note how many likes you get. The next 24 hours, like 3 minutes later, after that 24 hours is up, because you want to keep sort of the same posting time as you did for the first shot. You know, we want to have some control in this very lax experiment we're doing. Put something up that's more challenging to the viewer, more artistically challenging, something that maybe has to be looked at a little bit longer, something that you worked on a bit more, something that has more subtlety to it, but something by the same token that you're very happy with and you're very proud of. Put that on and then tally the likes for the next 24 hours with that shot. Now, most of the time, and you know where this is going, most of the time, you're going to get more likes for the pretty sunset than you will for the artistically challenging shot. Why is that? Is it because people don't know anything about photography? Not really, at least not in my view. I think what's happening is all you have to do is watch how people consume Instagram. That will teach you a lot. And I have actually spent time doing this. All the way from my boys and their friends to people who attend our workshops to people I just hang out with, I watch how they go through Instagram. And a lot of folks, I find this fascinating. They go much faster than I thought they would. They go faster than I do anyway. So they are whipping through the shots pretty quickly and a lot of times even one-handed. So they're scrolling with their thumb and they're going through these shots and they're going pop, pop, you know, because you can do that with Instagram. It's really nice. Just tap the image twice and you give that person a like. So you can go through a lot of shots very quickly and you can like a lot of shots very quickly. Now, the reason why I bring this up, and especially as it relates to the sunset shot, is because a lot of times most viewers on Instagram are not spending a whole lot of time on each shot. So if you just think about it logically, the shots that you're going to get a lot of responses to are shots that are very accessible, that are very easy to consume and evaluate in a short period of time. And when I say short period of time, I mean very short, like a second. Like you get 1 second of their attention. And sure, a sunset, a colorful sunset that you captured in Hawaii is going to be much easier for them to get their head around in that 1 second than a dark, moody, challenging, artistic shot. Now, does that mean that the sunset is a better shot than the dark, moody, artistically challenging shot? Well, we know the answer to that. No, not necessarily. It depends on who is viewing it. It depends on the audience. Here's where the rub is, in my opinion. If we pick an outlet to share our pictures, such as Instagram, and let's say that we use that as our primary outlet for our work, for getting responses to our work, and if we become really fond of accumulating a lot of likes per shot, in other words, if you don't get 100 likes for an image, you're disappointed. Let's just use that as a watermark. What can happen, and this can happen very easily, is that subconsciously we start skewering our work toward getting more likes, or at least maintaining the number of likes that we have been getting to that point. And if that audience is more of a bumper sticker audience who isn't spending a lot of time with our shots, then we can begin to move our work in that direction. And that might not be good for us artistically. Suddenly, we find ourselves taking the easy way out on our work and posting things and shooting things and feeling the need to capture things that are easily consumed in a second, maybe 2 seconds at the most. I won't say that we become a little lazy, but you know what happens, right? Because it's a lot easier just to point your camera at a sunset than it is to really create something that's challenging. So I worry about this sometimes for photographers who really care about photography. I'm not saying that we shouldn't shoot sunsets. We all do, and we all better keep doing it because they are fun and they are beautiful, and it's one of the most wonderful things that God creates for us. But we have to keep them in the category where they belong, which is something that is consumable quickly. Postcard shots, right? And we all know what postcard shots are. I think it's great to take postcard shots as long as you're realizing that you're taking a postcard shot and that is your intent. Okay, so we have that going on. We have Instagram and Facebook where audiences tend to be very supportive and tend to give us a lot of very positive feedback. What about our other work? What do we do with that? Where do we go with that? Well, that's where you go to photography groups. And sometimes this can take a little research and a little trial and error to find one that really resonates with you, where photographers are there, hanging out there, posting stuff that we can admire and learn from. Conversations are going on that are interesting to us and also teach us things. And then where we can get constructive criticism on our own work. Now, a lot of people don't care for these sites as much as they do Facebook and Instagram for the very reason that the likes can be less. Although, you know, sometimes even on these sites, photographers just go, you know what, I'm going to give them a like. I'm not really in the mood right now to really talk about the shot, but I'm going to give them a thumbs up so that they know that I think, you know, it's a pretty picture. Don't get me wrong, this happens even on sites where photographers hang out. But the odds of you getting some commentary that's helpful, it goes up considerably. But again, this is a double-edged sword, and, you know, we have to watch out for the part where we could get cut and where we could get hurt, especially on shots that, you know, we feel very good about and worked very hard. By the way, as a side note to that, I do want to do just a minor digression. And I've talked about this before on the podcast. Just because you put a lot of work into a shot doesn't mean that it is equally good. In other words, if you put 5 hours into one shot and 1 hour into another shot, that doesn't mean the shot that you put 5 hours into is five times better than the shot you put 1 hour into. It doesn't work that way. But a lot of times, because we have such a big investment in a photo, we've put so many hours into it, we feel like that the response to that image should be, you know, top drawer, top shelf, because of all the work that went into it. We actually become skewered in our perspective, and we're not really seeing the shot for what it is. What we are seeing is all the work that we put into that shot. So you have to look out for that situation as well. Just because you worked really hard on a photo doesn't mean that it's going to be received well by the people that you show it to. Sometimes a photo just doesn't get over the hump, no matter how much work we do to it. So you have to keep that in mind also while you're working on your images. Okay, let's talk a little bit about when we do want a little bit of feedback from our images. How do we do that? How do we get that? Well, I do think these photography groups can be very helpful. However, there is an art to giving constructive criticism and receiving it. And one of the first things that I want to point out about constructive criticism, where people are really trying to help you, but they don't like everything that you did on an image, is that they are talking about your photograph and not you. In other words, so when they say that they don't like something about the photograph, that doesn't mean that they don't respect you, that they don't think you're a good photographer, that they don't think you're a great artist. There just happens to be something that they see that in their mind they would do differently. And that separation is one of the first things that we have to do when we have conversations about our work, is that they are talking about our image or our writing or whatever we're creating, a painting, they are not talking about us as a person. And I would go so far as to say that they already think that you're a good artist or a good photographer or a good writer, or they would not be spending time on you in the first place, okay? But that's hard for folks sometimes because they tie their personality to the image and criticism about the image then, therefore, by extension, is criticism of them as a person. If you're going to do this, if you're going to be a creator and have discussions about your work, that's one of the first areas that you have to understand, that you have to separate that a little bit and isolate the conversation to the work itself and take you out of it, at least for the moment. Now, later on that night, if you go and, you know, you wrap yourself in your blankie and you hold your kitty really close and you go, why didn't they like my shot? You know, we can do that. But you don't want those feelings to come into your responses to the person that's trying to help you. Because if a person's trying to help you and then you come back at them defensively, then they're going to say, either they're going to fire back at you or they're going to withdraw. It depends on, you know, what their personality is. Neither one of those situations is very good for you. And chances are they probably won't spend much time on you in the future. So receiving constructive criticism really takes some practice. You know, my life as a moderator on these sites and doing what I do, creating a lot of content that's out there, I just really have to watch my emotions when people start calling me out. Because, for instance, when you're a moderator, they will even be more direct with you. And sometimes they will act out on you because they're upset by maybe a limitation you're trying to put on them, or you're saying something they don't like or whatever. And, you know, they'll just fire at you and they will get personal. And even when they are getting personal, you have to take a deep breath and try not to let that go in, because as we all know, they don't really know me, right? So their criticism, you know, might apply to something that I said or something that I asked them to do. Okay, leave it right there. Don't let it go beyond that. But it's hard. It's hard. It's hard when you feel like you're being attacked to separate yourself from that attack. But I think it's very important. And, you know, a lot of times people online, when they're trying to be helpful and they're doing constructive criticism about your work, the language that they use may sound harsher than what their intent is. And this is something that happens with writing. I know it was very interesting way back when I worked for O'Reilly Media, these like emails around the office or with people that we're working with outside the office, sometimes they would heat up a little bit. And my boss then used to have the saying, just pick up the phone and talk to them. And it was such a great line because, you know, these things can just really flare up when people are typing things and, you know, they're typing them in a hurry. Maybe they're not really thinking about what they're typing and so forth. But what they type is what you see. Whereas if you talk to them on the phone, they're going to say maybe similar things, but then you're going, oh, you mean that you think I should like not do that? And they're going, oh, no, I'm not saying that at all. I just think that you should do it this way instead of that way. Well, you wouldn't get that on the email, or you wouldn't get that on the comment, but you would get that on a phone conversation, right? So then suddenly you get a lot more context to the comments, and that helps you understand where the person's coming from. And then this is even better when you're talking in real life, right? Because you can see their body language and everything that goes with it. However, when we're just dealing with comments online, we don't get much context around them. So you have to be careful when people are using very direct language. A lot of times they don't mean to be that direct. That's just the way that it's coming out. They don't want to type a lot of words. They don't want to spend a lot of time, you know, fluffing you up around what they want to say. They just want to get to the point and go on to the next thing. So you really have to be able to take that in a way that I think more often than not is intended, which is to be helpful, maybe a little too direct sometimes, but not mean. And we know when people are mean, right? We know when people are mean. That comes right through. Now, in terms of when you want to help other people by providing constructive criticism, there are different philosophies on that. And I think mine probably is a little softer than some other people's. And in all honesty, it might be a little too soft. But here's what I do, is that the first thing that I always do when I'm looking at an image that I'm going to respond to is I try to identify the things about the shot that I like. I always like starting there. I know that leads to the, you know, what we call the big but I still think it's better to point out the things that you like. Start with the positive. And I do that, and I want to make sure that those things that I cite that I like, I really do. In other words, I'm not just making stuff up, but that it's honest, that I really do like the composition, I really do like the colors, you know, things like that. Then we get to maybe the one or two things that, if they were adjusted a bit, would fall into line with the things that I really like. And that's where you offer suggestions. And in that case, a lot of times what I'll do when I have some real suggestions, I'll go, what do you think? You know, what do you think about this? And it's very interesting to how folks respond to that, because sometimes I get, why would I do that? and then suddenly I'm going, okay, all right. This person is totally mystified by my suggestion. That's okay. I would try to respond with something concrete. Well, because I just think the colors, if they were a little warmer, would fall more into line with the subject or whatever it happens to be. However, if that doesn't resonate with you, that's totally okay, right? It's just the way that I'm looking at this image right now. So a lot of times folks, you know, will respond that way. And then sometimes, you know, they'll respond like, oh, I'll try that. And what I really like, and especially on the Skylum site, when we talk about an image and then they think about it for a bit and then they post a revised version of the shot, then, you know, we can comment on that. And I love that. I think that's really fun. Now, what's interesting is that the shot isn't always better. That's not the expectation, but maybe they solved one area. And, you know, this is the way photography and art is, right? Things are connected. So you might solve one problem, but then another area suffers as a result, especially if you're doing global editing and not localized editing. So in those cases, I got to really make sure. I think you really did improve this one area. However, I do miss the warm colors or the vibrancy or whatever from, you know, the other areas that were affected as a result of your changes. And that, you know, this is fun working on these shots. And I think the thing that I'm always looking for is that we add new techniques to our toolbox. So maybe in the end, the original shot ends up being the best shot. But maybe next time that person's working on a shot and they've learned these new things by experimenting with these new techniques from our previous conversations, then maybe that next shot that they do will be even better than it would have been before. Offering criticism and constructive criticism, I don't think you always have to do, you know, point out the best stuff first and then get to the bottom line. But I also don't think that it's a bad way to go. I think that unless you just absolutely hate the image from top to bottom, and then I'm not sure I would comment on it unless they really needed your comments. And then I would just say, it's just not my cup of tea. I just don't like these types of shots, you know, and that gives a person a chance to say, okay, fair enough. You know, it's not your cup of tea. But I do think that when you're offering criticism, think about how you like to receive suggestions, and then, you know, offer suggestions in that same spirit. And I realize that there's a lot of thinking going on here that I've just talked about for the last couple of minutes, but I think this does require that, right? We want to be thoughtful in our responses to people and in our suggestions to people, because this is important to them. Their work is important to them. And, you know, we don't want to be too cavalier with our comments. That being said, sometimes we just have to know when not to give a damn. I just don't solicit feedback. And there are projects where, just in my heart, I know that this is the way that I want to do the project. I know this is the way I want to carry it out. And I don't even want to discuss it with anybody because I don't want their suggestions. I don't want their ideas. I want to stay on track with what my vision is. A lot of times those work out for me, I have to say. They really do. We have to be careful about, and this kind of goes back to what I was talking about earlier. It's good to be open to suggestions and feedback and so forth, but we can't always let them drive our artistic vision. At the end of the day, you have to listen to the voice that's inside of you, and you have to trust your eyes And, you know, when people offer things and you don't like their suggestions, and just say, you know, I don't see it that way, but I really appreciate you taking time for helping me. And then, you know, you just detach from it right there. There are times we just have to follow what we think is right and just go that way. The times that I think this is a little troubling to me is when, let's say the artist, the photographer, is new to the art form. They haven't really mastered a lot of the fundamentals yet. And right away they insist that what they've created is great. And it isn't. I mean, it isn't even by objective standards. It isn't. I mean, there are all sorts of things wrong with it. It's just not pleasing to the eye, to many eyes. And, you know, those are tough situations for me to deal with, because in those cases, I think they should listen. And I do see that a lot of times with new folks, where they just said, I don't care what you say, this is great, and I'm going to go with it. And then you just have to say, you know, best of luck. And I mean, I hope you have a lot of success with that. And then, you know, the last thing I want to bring up on this, and I know I've been rambling on about this, but I think it's interesting for us to think about. There is a certain art to finding an audience that can really help you and help you grow. Try to find people that offer suggestions. And at the same time, you know, hang out in places where you get a lot of positive feedback, so you keep your confidence up and you continue to shoot and you continue to feel good about your photography. It's not an either or situation. It's a situation where, you know, we want to keep the ball rolling. We want to stay enthused and we want to feel positive. And at the same time, we want to grow. And I think in order to do that, you know, we need to work with a couple different audiences at the same time. Find the audiences that work for you in these different areas. You know, keep your spirits high, keep your creativity flowing, and keep your ears open. And I think that this is a lifelong pursuit that we're engaged in, and we can get better and better and better all the way to the very end. A few things to talk about here other than the pursuit of high art, right? So on Saturday coming up, we're going to have Build Your Digital Darkroom with Photos. I still have a couple seats open. Got more signups this week. And I just wanted to note that everyone who signs up for this class on March 10th, our Nimble Classroom on Saturday, March 10th, you get a free signed copy of my latest book, the Apple Photos Book for Photographers, second edition. That's part of the workshop. So you get that. And I just got a notice today from Rocky Nook that the books are on their way, right? I got a big box of books coming. So I'll be able to sign them and send them out to people that are in that March 10th class. If you can't make the class, but you still want the book, I'm very happy about that also. And I wanted to let you know that the book is now available on Amazon as well at the Rocky Nook site. And if you want to learn more about the book and the link to the Amazon site, if you like purchasing on Amazon, using your Prime, you know, for shipping, all that good stuff, then go to the digital story. And I have a story there about the book, and it'll tell you, you know, kind of what I'm trying to do there and the things that are covered and how it's different than the first edition. And you can read all that good stuff. And if I sway you my way to buy the book, then there's a link right there where you can do it. I think the book is $27 on Amazon right now. And again, if you're a Prime member, you get free shipping. So however you want to do it, but if you're interested in working in the Apple ecosystem and getting the most out of it, using all these great tools and having, you know, photos kind of in the middle of it all, I think this book and this upcoming class will really open your eyes to the possibilities. And it's a fun workflow. I totally enjoy it. Our San Francisco Street Photography Workshop is right around the corner, coming up on April 26th. We have a couple more people joining us, and so we're getting close to full now. And I think we have a seat or maybe two open, I'm not sure. But at any rate, there's still time to get in on this if you want to. The link is in the show notes, and you can just go right over there and sign up. As we get closer, I get more excited. And as I see the people that are coming to the workshop, some of them I know, I'm then I get even more excited because they're such great people and great photographers, and we're just going to have a blast. And again, April 26th through the 28th. And by the way, speaking of fun things, we have a winner for the Pentax camera, Pentax film camera. Teresa Hummel won it, and she is from the Boston area, I believe. And so she followed the film camera project on Instagram, which is a new Instagram feed that I created for people who like film. She was in there. Her name got picked. She's already sent me her she's already sent me her shipping address. And in fact, the box is on the way to her. I shipped it today. And the funny thing about Teresa, so I looked at her Instagram feed, when she got picked, and she shoots mainly with her iPhone. So I just feel really good about this cool 35mm film camera going to her, you know, to augment her photography, her iPhone photography. And she mentioned to me when she sent her shipping address, that her husband knows a lot about film photography. So she's got someone to help her. So I just think that's really good. Everyone who is following the Film Camera Project on Instagram, thank you so much for following. I hope, you know, I continue to engage you and delight you and educate you about film photography through that feed, which is my goal. And of course, I want to show you pretty pictures too. So we will continue to have fun, and I might do another giveaway here before too long. That would be pretty nice as well, right? And let me see, what else? The Sonoma County Hot Air Balloon and Drone Photography Workshop's coming up on June 8th through the 10th. And if you're on the reserve list, you should have a reservation form. I'm going to open it up to the general public here before too long, in another few days. So if you're on the reserve list and you want to come, we've already had people sign up. I would do so right now before I open it up to the public. And if you have any questions about that, you can just send me an email. And finally, a big thanks to our supporters, both through Patreon and Red River Paper. Our Patreon supporters, you have new movies waiting for you. You probably already got the notice, but two new movies waiting for you on the Patreon site that I posted. And again, this is part of your Inner Circle membership, and a thank you from me for supporting the site and our endeavors. And then, of course, the good folks over at Red River Paper, they continue to delight and support us. They continue to post things on their site that's interesting. And speaking of Facebook, which we've talked a fair amount about today, they have a terrific Facebook page over at facebook.com/redriverpaper. They are the only inkjet printing outlet that I use. I don't use anyone else's paper. It's Red River Paper or nothing. And I thank them for supporting the site. Click on the tile on any of the pages of Digital Story. Go over to our landing page, explore their site, see what they have to offer, get excited about printing, and make some prints. And that's another, by the way, that's another wonderful way to get feedback. And if you show somebody a print, I tell you, they're already leaning your way because they're just so impressed that you made a print. They're probably going to like the shot as well. And I think it is another wonderful way to share your images with other people. Red River Paper, longest running sponsor of the Digital Story, a tile on all the pages of Digital Story. Go there for your ink, for your paper, for your envelopes, to learn about inkjet printers, to read reviews and techniques, tutorials on techniques. They're a blast, and I'm really happy to have them as part of our endeavor here, along with our wonderful Inner Circle members. All right, that's going to do it for me today. Thank you so much for joining me. Really happy to have you here, working on some stuff for next week. Have a great week. Run that experiment that I talked about. We'll compare notes next Tuesday. Until then, bye-bye now.